From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the weekly internet talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 5 with guest John Seville, recorded April 23rd, 2007. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, offering professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hey, this is Richard Campbell, and you're listening to Run As Radio. And with me, as always, Greg Hughes.
Hello, Richard.
Here we are again. A full month's worth of shows done.
Yep, it's pretty exciting. Been having a good time with this. Been getting some great feedback from our listeners, who also seem to be having a good time, along with some terrific suggestions. They're emailing them to info@runasradio.com. And what you all are suggesting are things that we're taking to heart and we're looking at for including for future shows.
Having a good time talking to potential candidates. Every time we talk to a new guest, I'm thinking, wow, there's 3 shows there.
Yeah, I think a lot of the guests that we've had on, we're already considering having back at some time in the future. We seem to touch on topics and we're able to drill down on one slice of their pie, but there's an awful lot of other information that a lot of these people are willing to and excited to share.
So much to talk about. And if you have any suggestions or you want the show to be longer or anything you're thinking about, please contact us, info@runasradio.com.
You know, we received an email from Michael Minatillo who says, "Good day, Richard and Greg. It's good to hear my comments being read aloud on the show, on a recent show. It's the first time that I'm aware of that that's happened. I've been trying to consume the entire Pwop tech empire since I finished university late last year. It's good to know that it's not all about C# versus VB.net and fighting monkeys." although we certainly enjoy that part as well.
The whole Pwop tech empire is a lot of stuff, actually. Some of it less serious than others.
Michael goes on to say, "Managing emails is one of those things that most people don't really worry about until the first time they've had to find something. I've never had to do it for legal reasons, but for reputation management, well, you better believe it." And he also points out that the first episode, which was, of course, about storage, and we talked about SANs and NAS infrastructure. He says the first episode was cool, too. "I love the quote about most organizations not knowing or being able to locate a large portion of their data. Having constructed a few document management systems for clients, I can certainly appreciate that many don't even have a clear understanding of how to organize their data, let alone where it is." He says, "Keep up the good work, and I'll be hearing from you next week."
Well, thanks, Mike. That was a great email and interesting problem. Sounds like this is a guy who spent a lot of time looking for stuff, actually.
You know, I can tell you that I have. I think, you know, somebody said it once. I don't remember who it was, but they told me it was probably 10 or 11 years ago. They said, you know, it would really be really, really great if my organization only knew what it knows.
Yeah, it's one of those very fundamental things around.
I think, you know, and that's the whole world. There are people who make their livings doing nothing but taxonomy. And that's, you know, how do I organize things and why do I do it the way that I do it? And man, it might make an interesting show somewhere down the road.
Yeah. Is that really about being a data librarian?
Yeah, it's about being a data something.
Yeah.
And it's not all technology. You know, technology is one part of the pie, one slice of our pie that we can use in terms of solving problems. But there's more to it than just the bits that we stick on the computers.
You bet. All right, let's get to our guest. John Seville is the Director of Technical Infrastructure at Genient. He is a CISSP, a Security and Messaging MCSE on Windows Server 2003, an 8-time MVP, and a Krav Maga instructor. He is also the author of Windows Server 2003 Active Directory Design and Implementation from Pact Publishing. Hello, John.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. 8-time MVP. I don't even know what Krav Maga is.
I was going to ask the same question. I bet there's a lot of people that would like to know.
It's actually a martial art, and it was created for the Israeli Special Forces, and it's very much created so people can come in without a lot of background in martial arts or high fitness and just learn to defend themselves. So it's very practically based. It's a street self-defense system.
I imagine that comes in handy in an IT environment.
It is, because if you do poor consultancy and the client wants to attack you, you can defend and parry for a little bit.
Good deal.
You've obviously done a lot of interesting things here around Active Directory and so forth, but it sounds like the hot topic today is application virtualization.
This is Microsoft have very much been pushing. They are trying to move away from selling individual products to very much a software subscription model. So software assurance, enterprise agreements. And one of the ways they're trying to push that and encourage people to move to that is to offer additional services if you purchase software assurance, for example. And application virtualization was very much earmarked by them as a very new technology that has a lot of opportunity. And so they've bundled this along with three other products into something they call the Desktop Optimization Pack, which is a value add-on for anyone with software assurance.
So what does application virtualization really mean?
Okay, so you're probably used to the idea of sort of server-based terminal services, for example. And in terminal services, a user runs like a dumb client effectively that creates a session on a terminal server, so they get a start bar, a full Windows interface, and they can run programs and applications on that, and just the screen output is sent back to their local terminal. But essentially, all the processing, all the calculations is performed on the terminal server. So if I disconnect from the network, I can't run those applications. And it's really a waste. I have this powerful dual-core 64-bit with 4GB of RAM laptop that's effectively nothing more than a dumb screen. So that's terminal services. Then we actually get into like server virtualization, which is the idea of I can run special software on a server or desktop like virtual server, R2, or virtual PC that creates a virtualized operating system. So it virtualizes hard disks, so you just have a single file on your computer, like a VHD file, and a virtualized memory and processor and resources, and it runs separately from the underlying operating system. So I can be running Windows Vista or Windows Server 2003 R2, and in this virtualized environment, it can run Windows NT4 or Windows 2000. And it really gives me a sandbox capability so that I can run multiple operating system instances on one physical piece of hardware. For compatibility issues, I may have to run an application on Windows 2000. Yeah, I don't want to keep a Windows 2000 physical box in my environment. It may just be for supportability. I want to be able to reboot that instance of an operating system without affecting all the other applications running on a system. But that there's a lot of overhead in that. When I virtualize an entire machine, it's still a separate operating system. So from a patch management perspective, from an updating applications, from a monitoring perspective, that's still a whole operating system I have to monitor.
Yeah, we've seen server virtualization in data center applications or maybe some development organizations, but places where maybe you're wanting to reduce the capital expenditure associated and the amount of hardware that you need to physically put in a space.
Right. It's very much a great tool for consolidation. I mean, there's multiple technologies around. Virtualization is one. I can run multiple operating systems on one physical piece of hardware. Or I can use something like Windows Server Resource Manager, which is really a component of Windows Server 2003 Enterprise Edition that lets you allocate certain amounts of CPU and memory to individual services or applications. So it's really designed to stop a rogue application using up all the memory or all the CPU on a box and allows you to bottleneck it, say, hey, during the day, this application can use 20% of the CPU. At night, maybe it's a batch processing, you can use 80% of the CPU. So it stops one application bottlenecking the whole machine.
I saw a lot more of this back in Windows 2000 with the data center editions, where we were able to reallocate the number of processors to a given OS. So you'd have a 64 processor box and you'd split it you know, half and half or quarter to three quarters between Exchange and OLAP and then switch it around at night and so forth. Is this and beyond that?
Right. I mean, what you're talking about is processor affinity. The idea being I can allocate individual processors to certain processes running on the system. Yeah, I mean, this is going basically a step further. I can now slice up portions of a processor's usage to individual services and applications. And I can also slice up the amount of physical memory in the box, for example. So it's really a step beyond processor affinity. And that's the Windows Server Resource Manager. That's,
right,
again, just a server-side solution.
So let's talk again, drill down into what specifically then is the application virtualization.
Right. So let's take the idea of virtualizing an operating system. We have a lot of overhead. We create virtual disk environments and a virtual operating system, but it's a complete OS. What we have with application virtualization is we sequence an application. It's kind of like packaging in a special format. And we essentially perform an installation of the application on a special PC, and it captures all the file system activity it makes during an installation, all the registry changes, components it may register. And it captures all the changes it makes during installation, and it's basically a data stream file. And then it sends that stream in an on-demand fashion to the application virtualization client. Now, the way that actually functions is you have a special system guard environment running on your client PC. And this system guard environment is a sandbox nature, i.e. anything running in this system guard environment is restricted from talking directly to elements of the operating system. And the way it functions is the system guard has a virtual registry, a virtual file system, virtual fonts, system services, etc. So when it takes this stream of an application from the server, it runs within this sandboxed environment. So the application believes it's talking to the real registry, it believes it's talking to the file system. But in actual fact, it's communicating with these virtual file system and virtual registry layers within this system guard, this sandboxed environment. So the application just runs normally. It's running locally on the user's machine. It's not running on a server remotely. So I'm actually using my local machine's power and features, but it's not modifying the underlying operating system in any fashion. I'm not writing files to the file system, to program files, system 32. I'm not modifying the registry, but it's running completely locally on the box. And the whole fact that it's streaming on demand is facilitated by, if any of us have ever packaged an application, so we may have used WinInstall Lite, for example. And we would take a blank machine, we'd say snapshot now. So this is what the machine looks like. You install the application and you say snapshot again. And basically it would capture the differences in the state of the machine and create an MSI file for you. Think of that exactly the same as when we sequence an application for virtualization, except in addition to it seeing what changed, it then asks you to execute the application a few times. So we can actually see, well, when I run, out of this 120 megabyte Word installation, I only actually need 30 megabytes of data to get the interface up and running and actually usable by the end user. And so not only does it store this single file stream of data about the virtual file system and registry that's required, it breaks it into two blocks, a feature block one and a feature block two. And the feature block one is everything that's needed to get the application initially initialized. And that's all that it sends when I fire up an application. So when I double click my Word icon that appears on my machine because of the SoftGrid client, SoftGrid's the name of the service that they purchased, it just pulls down feature block one, which runs inside the system guard environment, creates that virtual registry and file system overlay, and the app's up and running. It thinks it's locally installed, but it's running in this protected environment. If I then go and run a feature that wasn't part of that initial feature block, it pulls it down on demand from that full feature block two in 32K chunks. So for example, if I'm in Word and then I select help, help may not have been something that I originally selected when I was sequencing the application, i.e. getting it ready for virtualization. So we'll go and pull that down from the SoftGrid server so it can be shown on the local machine.
That's pretty incredible, really.
I mean, it's really cool technology, and it's what makes it so fast. I mean, if you look at traditional software deployment technologies, group policy, SMS even, if I wanted to push out Office, I can get the icon, I can assign the application to a PC, they can click the icon, and it will install Office.
Right.
So that's pretty quick, but it's 3, 4, 5 minutes before they're actually up and running.
And you're still talking about hauling most of the application across the network.
Exactly. Whereas in this capacity, it's only pulling down what's actually needed to get it up and running. And in reality, it starts within 10 seconds, because if you have a 120 meg app, let's take Word, it only needs 30 meg of that to actually get up and running.
So how do you decide on that 30 meg? I mean, you mentioned this whole, you know, you decide what goes into the initial load. What figures that out, or how do you figure that out?
So when you want to actually capture an application to allow it to be virtualized, you go through a sequencing process. And that's really in two parts. The first part is, like I described, it does a snapshot of before, install the app, snapshot after. And that's what it knows is the total content of the stream. It then asks you to execute the application. And during that execution, it's looking at, so what is being used out of this data stream?
Right.
And so it's that person's responsibility as a sequencer to decide, well, these are probably the most common functions. So I should do a file open, I should do some word art, I should do some spell checking.
It's all about that scenario that you walk through that makes it feel like what the user would use.
Exactly. And it's not the end of the world if you get it wrong. I mean, if you miss things, it doesn't matter. All that it means is when the user accesses those functions, they will get pulled down in real time from the SoftGrid server. So they might see a second delay.
So the efficiencies that are built in really can be quite valuable, especially maybe if you're not on a very fast network.
I mean, yeah, I mean, this is the whole point. So speed of delivery of this is a great factor. I mean, that really is a big selling point. But when you start to look at the way that it's not actually installing itself on the computer, and it's protected from other virtualized applications, you get into a whole second selling point, which is compatibility.
Get rid of those interaction problems.
Exactly. I mean, imagine today we bring in a new application into an environment. If I've got 10 apps, which is a small number, when I bring in app number 11, I have to say, well, is it compatible if app 1, 3, and 5 are installed?
Right.
What about if 7's installed? What about if it's just 2 and 4? So there's a huge amount of regression testing, compatibility testing to get anything out today. Well, if you virtualize it, they're invisible to one another because it's not installing anything locally on the machine. They do not know the other applications are even installed. So my time to deploy this business critical application that sets me ahead of my competitors, instead of taking 2 weeks or 4 weeks or months to test and get deployed, I can deploy in days. I mean, it's a huge boon to a business to be able to get these technologies out there so much quicker.
You certainly mitigated the threat of a new application deployment.
Exactly. This really is compatibility problems that cut right down. And my underlying operating system is much healthier. If I'm not installing applications actually locally on the box anymore, my trouble tickets, my help desk calls are going to go down.
Right.
Instead of, hey, Word is corrupt, you have to go down, troubleshoot, try and work out what's wrong, you just delete the local cache of the stream and it'll pull it down again. There's nothing installed on the box.
Right. And getting new boxes online, just a trivial matter.
Exactly. And the underlying OS now doesn't have a registry full of settings, a ton of components registered. So my machine's going to start up a lot faster. I've got less junk in the registry, so the amount of non-pageable kernel memory is less. So I have a leaner, healthier machine.
Right.
Are there any limits to the types of applications that I can do this with? If I have a corporate legacy, say financial application, which have a tendency to you know, fester and sit around for years and years quite often, some of these line of business applications that's written by some company that doesn't exist any longer using an older installer technology, am I going to be able to work with those, or are there any limitations?
Right. I mean, that's a great question. And there's really, is it possible and is it supported? So, take away all the idea of virtualizing applications. Essentially, all this technology is doing is laying an overlay over the physical machine's file system, registry, services. It's nothing more than adding a little filter over it. So anything that can install on a machine can be virtualized, because all it's doing is saying, when I install this machine, this application, it lays down these files on the file system. Let's capture that in the overlay. It makes these registry changes. Let's capture that in the overlay. You can do ODBC configuration. You can do anything you want in this.
Right.
So from a just legacy application, there should be no issues.
Now, that still presumes sort of classic Windows app with multiple DLLs and registry entries and so forth. If I have a really old app that's just one monolithic executable, what control do you have?
Right. I mean, it's one legacy executable, but it's still just something sitting on a file system. So there's no complex registry overlay or anything else, but I can still overlay, instead of putting that one executable on the local file system, I'm just virtualizing it on a virtualized file system. I mean, you're not probably getting a lot of benefit at that point.
Right.
Other than when you want to update it, because we've not even got into the technology if I want to update an application yet. But even before we go there, back to the question, there are issues, and they call them recipes. So if you have more of an application that's part of the operating system, so something like Internet Explorer,
right?
That's very much a core part of the OS now. And so there's more complications with, so I'm running Internet Explorer 7. Can I virtualize Internet Explorer 6, Internet Explorer 5? Yes, you can. There's limits to what's supported by Microsoft at this time. So absolutely, yes, you can do it. And there's recipes which are really the guidelines on how to do it, but it's not fully supported.
Right.
So there's doing it, and then there's what you'll get support for.
One of the things that I'm curious about, having not dived into the details of this hands-on myself, is what about applications? Let's take Outlook, for example, where there's profiles and there is data that's stored, you know, on a per user basis. How is that dealt with in this technology?
Right. So I said it has this virtual file system, this virtual registry, which would totally make you think, okay, well, it's virtualized, it's sandboxed. I can't save any state. Every time I start up Office, is it going to prompt me for my name and my initials? Well, yes, it has this I tried to use the word overlay. It has a file system overlay, which means when it goes to look for a file, it checks the overlay first.
Right.
And then it can go down and read from the actual underlying file system. Now, it has safeguards. It's like a one-way valve. It can go down and read from the file system and the registry, but it can't write to it. And that's a general rule for most of the file system. So program files, Windows, etc. However, it does let you write information into your local profile. So otherwise, it would be useless. If I could run Word, but I couldn't save any documents, they
wouldn't
be much
point.
Use to me.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's exactly the same for exactly as you're talking about. So data around configuration and customizations, it's allowed to write through into your like local profile. So anything that's not considered part of the operating system, protected program files, so really your My Documents, for example, it's allowed to write down to and store configuration information.
Now, that still presumes, I'm not sure how it knows. If I have to have an app that writes that configuration information properly, doesn't try and write to program files or to the root or anything inappropriate, or write in the registry to the hardware configuration?
Now, it has a redirection layer as well. So if it does find an application that's really, in effect, misbehaving and trying to write to a place it's not allowed to, it will actually capture that and store it away locally into your profile in a sort of add-on overlay.
Aren't we seeing some of this behavior in Vista today?
Well, Vista, Vista has a redirection capability for like normal users. So for example, if you try and write to a protected part of the operating system or protected area of the registries, it does exactly what you're saying. It redirects it to a special place under your profile.
Right.
So yes, this is performing a very similar task. Vista's protecting you from yourself. SoftGrid's protecting itself from you, I think.
You know, one of the, I'm thinking here about the, some of the side benefits of doing this. One of them I can think of is, take the Office applications. If I was upgrading from Office 2003 to Office 2007 and had to do that across every laptop and desktop, across my environment, it sounds like it could be substantially a different type of effort using this technology.
Exactly. Now, there are some caveats. So there's some pros and there's some cons. So Office is a great example. So one of the things when I demo this to clients is I go in, and today it's very difficult to try and run multiple versions of Office side by side. If I need for backwards compatibility to run Word XP or Word 2000 or Access 2000, it's very hard to do that with a machine with Access 2007 installed. But if I virtualize, I can run every version under the sun as many times as I want with no issues. But now let's think about the sandbox idea. Applications running inside virtualization cannot today talk to other applications. Now, if you consider Office 2007, for example, you may have many applications running on your machine that use underlying services of Office.
Right.
So if I virtualize Office 2007, those other applications that call on its services may experience problems. Now, you can package multiple applications together in one virtualized app, which would let them talk to each other. But that becomes quite messy and problematic.
Well, you're back to the original problem of application interaction.
Exactly.
But if that's a feature you need that these apps have to interoperate, I'm thinking about a CRM app that's connected to Outlook, for example. You'd pretty much have to put those in the same virtual application instance.
Right. Or you make a decision, well, something that's core to most of what I run, I'm not going to virtualize that. So if something like Office 2007, that's kind of like a foundation for a lot of what you run, you may not virtualize Office 2007. That you may run locally on the box and deploy that. But what you would virtualize is like Access 2000, Word XP, any legacy versions.
Right.
And then we get a lot of advantages from patching. When I want to update a virtualized application, I don't have to do that whole pushing out the update. I just once on the sequencing machine, the one I use to capture it,
right,
I can replay that sequence and apply the patch, and it will automatically ascertain the delta, what has changed, and just send down those changed bytes to any of my SoftGrid clients in real time.
Now you
patching is very easy.
You mentioned that these virtualized applications cannot communicate with one another. That raises a question for me, which is, are there any benefits or side effects related to application security by running them in this particular type of environment?
That's a good question. I mean, from a security perspective, yes, you're protecting what they can communicate with. So if I'm worried about the sensitivity of an information, maybe the contents of its memory dumping it out, if I run it in this virtualized instance, it does have a, I guess, a more protected state than a normal application running locally on the box.
Right.
I mean, what they're planning on doing in the future is you will be able to link sequenced applications together. So I think this is version 5 we're talking about now. In version 5, you'll be able to create ties between multiple sequenced applications, and they will be able to talk to each other. So they're still running in individual sandboxes, but you're effectively, think of it like a firewall, you're opening up little holes in that sandbox.
Yeah, a communication channel.
Exactly, to let them communicate.
So how does someone get involved in this product?
Okay, so Microsoft, as I mentioned before, they're getting into the subscription. So they want you to buy services, software assurance. So you have to be a software assurance customer,
right?
Enterprise, EA, whatever. And you purchase this. It's part of the desktop optimization pack. So the cost of this varies. it can be between $7 to $10 per desktop. And it's a subscription. You're not buying these products. You're basically leasing them for a year.
Interesting.
So this is an annual charge. And Microsoft went out and bought four separate companies. They bought Softricity, which is obviously what we're talking about, the application virtualization.
That's the root app here.
Yep. This is the one part of it. They then created the Microsoft Asset Inventory Services. So if you've seen SMS, SMS gives you inventory information.
Right.
Well, that relies on really what's in add remove programs, WMI calls. It doesn't go and detect, well, this executable sitting in this folder or this registry key exists. What the Microsoft Asset Inventory Services does is it actually go out, scan the file system, scan the registry, and find pieces of information and then compare it to an online catalog of hundreds of thousands of apps to tell you what's really installed on the box, what types installed, is it registered, is it trial. And it's actually running in a service mode, so you have no server-side installation.
Right.
You just deploy the client, and it goes and talks to the Microsoft servers. They've created the Microsoft Advanced Group Policy Management. So if you use Group Policy, it lets you have change management around your group policy objects, offline editing, role-based management. And for a lot of the fanboys, Win Internals, they purchase Win Internals.
Yes.
So that whole suite of tools is now part of this as well. So if you took the individual components, there's hundreds and hundreds of dollars per desktop this would cost, and you get it for like 10. Now, originally they wanted to give it away for free, but I think Microsoft got fed up being sued by the competition and everything else, so it's easier for them to sort of sell it for $10.
Right.
So, I mean, that's really how you get this technology. You buy the desktop optimization pack. If you have terminal servers, you can purchase application virtualization in a terminal server model. So you can run the virtualized applications just on the terminal server. Now, you may wonder, why would I bother to do that?
Yeah.
Well, even with terminal servers, if I have a farm of 10, 20, 30 terminal servers, I'm still pushing the application out to the terminal server. I'm still testing compatibility. I'm still testing the amount of time it pushes. I get all the same benefits. And plus, I remove that frequent reboot I typically have with terminal servers where I'm running 50, 60 instances of an app. Memory gets fragmented, corrupted, and I have to reboot the server.
And take everybody down with you.
Exactly. When I run it in a sandbox, the garbage collection is spot on. It cleans up every remnant of that, and that's not an issue anymore.
What about the licensing of the apps that run from this environment, like Office, for example?
Right. I mean, this is a technology designed to deploy any application.
Right.
They've not given special consideration, or that would obviously be a nice to have to think, okay, because one of the things this technology lets you do is restrict the execution to a number of concurrent usage.
Right.
So if I purchase like a CAD application that I can only run 10 concurrent usage, this will help you do that. This does not help you with Office licensing where I'm now running a license 20 copies because I'm only going to run 20 concurrently.
Right.
It differs by application, but you still have to purchase one per machine that will ever run this Office.
Yeah, if your licensing model is the cow model and you need one per machine.
Then you still have to have the cows on a per user or per machine basis, right?
Exactly. This is not designed to help you get away from licensing the software.
Well, we're still waiting for that one. Yeah.
But it sounds like licensing is going to have to evolve to live in this model too.
I mean, I agree. I mean, and this will open up a lot of doorways. And I mean, this technology Microsoft are looking at as maybe the future for app deployment. Yeah, totally. So Windows Vista introduced us to image-based deployment of the OS.
Right.
They're totally looking at, in the future, we may see applications are deployed as a stream. So one of the things I didn't really talk a lot about is these streams are cached locally on the machine, which is obviously vital for laptop users. They don't want to have to be stayed connected to the network.
Right.
Well, it caches all of that content that's running, and you can configure it to cache the entire stream. I don't want to be on a plane selecting a new feature I've never run before and it not being available.
Yeah,
sure.
So I can configure that stream to run locally, and I still get the benefit of compatibility, testing, clean machine. It's just now cached locally in a stream.
Yeah, and I could see you getting to work while plugged in, and in the background, the rest of the app is streaming down for when you do get disconnected.
Exactly.
And ultimately, one of the things that can allow companies like Microsoft and others to reduce the cost of licensing is to be able to track what's being used and to have a little more control over the actual deployment. And it sounds like, at least sometime in the future, as this technology grows, this is something they may be able to take advantage of to help them do just that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, I mean, it's a phenomenal technology. I mean, it's certainly what we are basing a lot of our architecture around at Genient now, is actually using this to push out those major applications. And I can track it exactly. I can set this user can run this application for 30 days, but after that, they can't use it anymore. I can select groups of users that are allowed to run these applications. So I have so much more control than a locally installed application.
I think there's a huge potential here in licensing by usage.
Exactly.
Going forward. John, it's been a really great conversation. I appreciate your thoughts around application virtualization. I think it's a new world out there. And I think we'll have to come back again and get into some of the other topics.
No, that's great. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks very much. And you're listening to Run As Radio. Talk to you next week.